This is HeartWise, offering practical tips and time-proven guidelines to make your life healthier, happier, and more fulfilling. Today you'll learn simple Bible-based principles for building and maintaining optimum mental and physical health, all while deepening your relationship with your Creator. I'm your HeartWise host, Charles Mills. Here's a rather sobering statistic. Today, the average teenager sends 3,339 text messages each month and spends 97 minutes a day playing video games. Add to that social networking, video watching, and emailing, and well, you can see where this is going. Life, it seems, to many, is happening only online. Should a parent be concerned? You bet, and for good reason. All is not warm and fuzzy in cyberland. There are real and present dangers out there. And all this technology is even impacting a child's mental and physical health. Our guest today has written a book designed to help parents navigate their child's digital life, and I feel it is vital that we have him talk with us about this topic. Brian Houseman has been working with parents and teens for more than 20 years, is a much sought-after speaker at many conferences, churches, schools, camps, and military bases. He's an author and executive director of the 360 Family Conference. Brian, welcome to HeartWise.
Hey, I'm so glad to be here with you today.
Now, you tell people that there's a direct correlation between the use of media and academic achievement. What is that correlation?
Well, we're seeing through several different studies that the longer and more time that a student spends on social media, the greater effect it has on their grades. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's necessarily just because of the time on social media, like say, for instance, that it's such a distraction that they can't focus on school. But I think it's because social media is affecting our kids mentally and emotionally as well. Mm-hmm. And so that becomes a distraction. Not that they're necessarily just on the device, but it's even once they're off of social media that they continue to dwell on it and think about it, what other people have said about them on there.
Now, what other people have said about them, if they're getting praise, that should be not a problem. If they're getting something else, is that where the issue is? Are people being shamed online?
Exactly. That's the issue. Is cyberbullying, I would make the argument that it's one of the two biggest issues concerning technology that we as parents just don't understand. Roughly 34% of all teenagers now say that they have been victims of cyberbullying. And I know there's a lot of different ways you could define cyberbullying, but basically this is at least one out of three of all kids that are saying that other people are harassing me, you know, online. But yet only 8% of parents say that they're concerned that it's going to happen to their kid. And that's a big difference between reality and the la-la land that we live in sometimes as parents.
Is cyberbullying more common online than in real life? I mean, if you walk around the school hallways, you're going to hear bullying going on there.
You are, but the real insidious part about cyberbullying is that, you know, when you and I were kids, we always knew who our bully was.
Yes.
Because,
yes.
You know, someone would come at you and kind of point you and say, hey, man, after school on the playground, you know, you and me, 3:30, you know, kind of a thing.
Yes.
And so you know who your bully is. But today, almost half of all cyberbullying is anonymous.
Oh.
And so these kids are being harassed, and they have no idea who the person is. And this is why it's so mentally debilitating, is now they can't go to school, they can't go to church, they can't go in public without feeling like that everyone they're encountering is potentially their bully.
And I would assume also that when you and I were kids and someone called us out in the hallway, we know that 15 or 20 people may have heard it, but online, everyone can hear it. The whole world can hear it. Is that an issue too?
It is. So what happens is it could be, you know, real world bullying, like say at school or on the playground.
Right.
Many times that can quickly be, you know, nipped in the bud with a teacher, a principal, some authority figure, you know, saying, you know, knock it out. You're going to get school suspension, that kind of a thing, if you keep picking on this person. But when it's online, it becomes this tide, this tidal wave that just continues as the bullying is passed from one person to the next to the next. Many times there's no way to know who the originator of the bullying was, and there's no way to make it stop because it's like whack-a-mole. You address it with one kid, but now it's gone on to the next kid.
Yeah. Of course, it would seem to someone like me, who is not a kid and hasn't been for quite some time, that the best thing to do is just stay offline. Don't go on to Twitter. Don't go on to Facebook. Is that what you're trying to tell people to do?
Actually, that's not what I instructed to do, because we do live in a technologically driven world, and so our kids are going to be on social media. It's just a given that it's going to be a part of their life. And so the objective then is, how do we teach our children how to use technology in an honoring way? You know, and the way that I explain it to both parents and teens is that you have to use technology in a way that's honoring of your relationship with yourself. You know, that you should be able to, at the end of the day, look in the mirror without any shame about the way that you've used technology, that you use it in a way that's honoring of your own body, your own mind, your own hands. So always being mindful of what you're looking at online, the information you're passing on about others. So when someone says, hey, here's a screenshot about somebody at school, you know, pass it on. You know, that you have to decide as a teenager, are you going to continue to be part of the problem or are you going to be the solution? The other thing is to use it in a way that's honoring of your spiritual relationship or your creator, as well as use it in a way that's honoring of people around you. And so for us and our family, we're constantly having conversations with our own kids about the information that they're sharing with other people, as well as what others are sharing about them. So just as a very practical example, just 3 days ago, someone sent my daughter a very derogatory message, you know, calling her a specific word. And she is incredibly mature, makes very wise choices, great friendships. And so she showed this to me, and I just said, this person has lost the right to communicate with you on social media. And so she unfriended the person, she blocked them, deleted them from her contact list, so that there's no way this person can continue to try to communicate with her.
I like what you did there. You put the blame where it belongs, not on your daughter, not on something she did or what they think she did. You put it where it belongs, on the person who actually did the bad thing, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, so often as parents, when we find out that there's been something inappropriate that's happened with social media or with the screens, that we respond by trying to shame our children into right behavior. But shame never addresses the heart. It just addresses that particular issue. And so what happens is, if, you know, your kid comes to you and says, I was at this party and this guy had alcohol there, well, then, you know, immediately the parent loses perspective about what their child, how they may have responded in that situation. And instead they jump on the issue that there was alcohol there. And now the kid learns, okay, don't ever share with mom what happens with me out in public.
Wow.
Don't misunderstand. I'm not arguing for letting our kids go to parties where there's alcohol. But the same thing happens online, is that sometimes our kids, they kind of drop these little nuggets in the conversations just to see how we're going to respond. Is mom and dad going to be a safe person for me to share what's happening, you know, with what's happening in my life? And so when they share these difficult things with us, we got to be very careful how we respond.
Our guest today, Brian Houseman, he is the author of the book, Tech Savvy Parenting, Navigating Your Child's Digital Life. And I am learning a lot of good stuff right here, listener. I hope you are too. Let's assume, Brian, that we have teenagers listening to this program. I think we do. We have them all around the world listening to this program because they want to be healthy mentally, spiritually, and physically. But this is very important. What about this sexting, where the sexual activity is now down to ones and zeros? It's now involved online. How do we deal with that?
Sexting, I would say that's one of the other biggest issues that parents are unaware of. Now, sexting is defined as a sexual-oriented text or message online, you know, whether it's through social media or text messaging. And roughly one out of five of all girls admit to 40% of all teenagers say that they've had sexual conversations with other people on social media. So these are intimate conversations about their sexuality, their sexual choices, or what they're thinking. And one out of four of them are having these conversations with complete strangers. I mean, the only place that they know this person is online, and yet they're having one of the most intimate conversations they can have. 12% of teenagers set up a face-to-face meeting with the stranger that they're having this intimate conversation with. Yes. And that's part of the danger, is a lot of times as teenagers, and this is not a slam to any teenagers at all, but they don't have the life experience to understand how the information they're sharing could be used against them, or that everyone is not necessarily who they say that they are. Yeah. God has created us for intimacy, and the more time we spend with someone, whether it's physically in the world or online digitally, the more time we spend with them, the greater the level of trust. And so we're seeing that happen with teenagers as well. As parents, one of the things we have to do is constantly be engaged to know who is it that our kids are communicating with, what kind of apps they're using, that kind of thing. But with the teenagers, I do school assemblies all over the United States. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I tell teenagers is there is no redo, there is no delete, and there is no take back when it comes to social media. Wow. That when you send something to someone, whether it's a picture, a video, or a text, you're giving them a gift with the expectation that it's going to be passed on to someone else, that it's never private. We've had situations just here in our own state where two kids at a private Christian school, they dated for a whole year, and then she ended up breaking off the relationship, and he felt jilted. And so he took these pictures that she had sent to him and laminated them and made them look like playing cards, and then went to school and passed them out to all the other boys at school. And of course, you know, here it is. She's gone to the same school for 12 years. Yeah. And then now she doesn't get to finish because of one mistake. And it's easy for us as parents to say, you know, how stupid could you be? How foolish? Now, I'm not excusing the behavior at all. But what I am saying is that I understand. I get it. You know, we all know what it's like to be a teenager. It's not that they're trying to be foolish. It's that they have such a deep, God-given need to be loved. Mm. And so sometimes they make foolish choices.
Okay. I was going to say, yeah, that teenagers and we adults have this as well, but teenagers especially, they're just saying to the world, pay attention to me. Yeah. Let me know that you know that I exist.
Yeah.
It's important for me to know that I am something here in this world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're going to talk more about this with Brian Howes. We'll take a short break right now. When we come back, I want to talk to Brian more about this tech-savvy parenting, his book, why it's important to us. We're beginning to see a little bit of that. And more importantly, what we as parents can do, and teenagers, what you can do to protect yourself from what's out there. Don't want to scare you, just want to make sure that you are concerned about this and you have the knowledge to fight back. So stay right where you are.
I'm Dr. James Markham with your biblical prescription for life. Have you ever wondered what to believe or who to believe? Should I take this medication or receive this treatment? In June 2015, Dr. Richard Horton, the editor of The Lancet, wrote, and I quote, "Much of the scientific literature simply may be untrue." And in the New England Journal back in 2009, the editor of that journal wrote, "It is no longer possible to believe much of the clinical research that is published." Our biblical prescription for today helps us learn what we should believe. And that's from Luke 11, verse 9. Ask, and it will be given. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and it will be open. Our biblical prescription for life is turn to the Bible. Ask the ultimate physician to help you in all of these decisions, and he will be there. To learn more, go to our website. That's heartwiseministries.org.
Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Charles Mills. Our guest today is Brian Houseman. He is the author of Tech Savvy Parenting, Navigating Your Child's Digital Life. We're talking about the dangers out there just on the other side of that computer or that laptop or that smartphone or that cell phone. It's just waiting there. And we as people, in our great desire to matter and our great desire to be involved in someone's life and to have someone love us, are giving more than we should. Would that be the message you're trying to say here, Brian?
Oh, absolutely. That there's got to be moderation in everything.
Okay, how do we do that, Brian? How do we learn the difference between a moderated presence online and an unmoderated presence online, which can cause all kinds of problems?
I think a lot of it comes down to the time of day and the length of time that you're spending online, you know, as a teenager and as an adult as well. I mean, let's just be honest, Charles, we are just as addicted to these things as our kids are.
Yeah.
And so for, you know, my own daughter, she goes with me and speaks sometimes at these engagements. And I had her just a couple of weeks ago. I was in Singapore, and I brought her with me, and she talked at the conferences about, from a teenager's perspective, what it's like to experience technology fatigue. And in her generation, this constant need to be connected, you know, to feel like I have to know what's happening with everyone else. And so we just told her, this is back when both of our kids started getting on social media at 13 and 14, is we said, you need to give yourself permission to unplug at a certain point every day. Hmm. And so what she does is when she comes home from school, after being at school all day, she'll spend about 30 minutes to get on social media and, you know, check in with all the friends, you know, post a picture on Instagram, and then she turns her phone off so that she can focus on her schoolwork. And this is not a rule given by us, because we know if we just make that a rule, then that's going to be, if that's standard, then that's going to be broken.
Of course.
But instead, we want it to come out of our own heart. You know, what do you need to do to self-regulate in your life as a teenager? And so she just turns it off, you know, for about an hour and a half or so, does her schoolwork, and then she can get back on it. And one day I walked in, and her phone was sitting on the shelf across the room from her. And I said, why is your phone over here? And she said, Dad, I just had to turn it off because every 30 seconds it was beeping and vibrating as people updating me on social media. And she said, I can't even focus on what really matters. I thought, wow, that's great that you understand that this really doesn't matter, you know, what's going on social media, that it's your school, it's your real world friends, your family that matters the most. The other is just time of day. I would really encourage parents as well as teenagers that may be listening that at the end of the day when you're laying in bed is probably the worst time to get on social media. And I know the habit is that you want to check in one last time, you know, before you go off to sleep. But what happens is social media is so addictive because we quickly get caught up into the conversations, you know, that are happening online. Or like a drug, you know, you look at 10 people's update and then you want to look at just 10 more. And what happens is that you end up staying up longer and longer and longer. The typical teenager that is a texter, which is kind of an oxymoron, that's like all teenagers, 44% of them, 44% of them lose on average 1 hour of sleep a night. So if you are a texting teenager or you have a kid who texts or looks at social media in their bed at night, they get on average about 6 3/4 hours of sleep, whereas the American Pediatric Society recommends that teenagers need 9 hours of sleep for good emotional and mental health. Because what happens is they're staring at the screen and you get sucked into it, you know, what's happening with everyone else. And you end up losing sleep. So then you wake up grumpy, irritable, disrespectful, unfocused, you know, sleepy. And so I just encourage you to find, you know, a time of day to say, you know, like, I'm going to unplug. Mm-hmm. And then a location, you know, in your house to say, I'm not going to bring this into bed with me.
You make a point that you've hinted at several times in this conversation so far, that this phone texting and social meeting is addictive. That, I mean, how in the world do you equate internet with like a powerful drug?
What happens is, we were just talking about using the phone in bed with you. Right. This goes not just with our teenagers, but with everyone, is that when you're staring at a white light in the bed, it triggers serotonin in your brain. Mm. And then what the serotonin does, one of the things it does, is it tells your brain to tell your body it's daytime, it's time to be awake. Oh. And so your body literally cannot fall asleep when it should be when you're sitting there in the room because you're staring at this white light. You mentioned video games. The typical boy now spends an hour and a half a day just playing video games. Mm-hmm. Because what happens is you're playing video games, the reward from playing video games as you win, you know, you kill the bad guy, you win the race, whatever it is, mm-hmm. it triggers the same part of your brain. It creates dopamine in your brain, mm-hmm. which is created in the pleasure, you know, it's part of your brain. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing that happens when you're on crack, you know, when you're on cocaine, is that it creates dopamine so that your brain tells your body, oh, this is good. We want more of this. And which is why, you know, as a parent, when you come to your 12-year-old and you say, it's time to get ready for bed, you need to get off the video games, he's going to respond by saying, oh, just one more level, Mom. You know, just one more man, Mom. You know, because it's almost impossible to just turn it off cold turkey right then.
Is there a way, other than the time limits and then the place, is there a way to have a presence on Facebook or on Twitter or whatnot that is protective? Are there things you should just not say as a child or as an adult?
One of the things I communicate to teenagers as well at these school presentations and youth presentations is that there is no such thing as privacy on social media. And so that everything that you're posting, even if your profile is set on private, that really anything can be screenshotted. One of the things we know is now 67% of all teenagers have their social media set on private. Now, we should really champion that as parents and say, yay, rah, that's awesome. But that still leaves 33% who are open. And so that's tens of millions of teenagers whose data, whose information is freely accessible to anyone. So one of the things is that if you're going to use social media, you should have it on private, and that you should never give out your username and password, your password for your profile to a friend. That's very common for teenagers, especially who are on Snapchat, because they want to keep what's called your snap streak, which is basically that you're updating your Snapchat every day. And, you know, it's kind of a badge of honor, you know, so to speak, in their teen world to say, hey, my snap streak is 483 days, you know, meaning they've updated it that many times. And so what will happen is they'll give out their password to someone else so that if they can't update it one day, or if they got punished and got their phone taken away, you know, their friend can update it for them. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a dangerous precedent because friendships are so fleeting, you know, in school, in adolescence. And so now you've given out your password to this person. I really encourage, especially high school seniors, that by the time you get to be a senior, it is time to get your social media, what I call college ready. And so one of the things you could do is find some adult that you trust, give them access to all of your social media for 24 hours. It doesn't have to be a parent, but find someone that you trust, give them your passwords for 24 hours and say, I want you to look at everything I've ever posted on my social media. And anything that you tell me that's a red flag, I'm going to delete it. And then you can change your passwords. Because once you apply to a college, you have a 70% chance that that college admissions counselor is going to be looking for your Snapchat, your Facebook, your Instagram, your YouTube accounts, because they've concluded that what a teenager does online is a better indicator of their character than what they've made on the ACT score.
Wow.
So in the Tech Savvy Parenting book, I have a whole chapter on how do you get your social media college ready and how do you protect your digital reputation. That every one of us have a real world reputation and we have a digital reputation, meaning people that we only know them online. Right. And what's happening is the more technologically driven our culture becomes, we actually have a much broader digital reputation than real world reputation. So as a teenager, you want to make sure that these people that you're trying to impress with your ACT scores, your community service projects, you know, the honors classes you've taken, the mission trips you've gone on, you want to make sure that they know the real you and not just silly things that you posted online. I always encourage high school seniors, you know, create a LinkedIn account, you know, a professional social media account, and start having people, your youth pastors, your coaches, your teachers, you know, connect with them and have them write recommendations for you, endorse you on LinkedIn.
Well, my goodness, there you go. Tech Savvy Parenting is the name of the book by Brian Hausman, Housman, Navigating Your Child's Digital Life, available, I'm sure, about anywhere you can buy books. And I recommend, listener, that you get a hold of that. Is there a website we should go to that you can encourage us to visit?
Our main ministry website is called 360family.org. That's 360family.org.
Brian Hausman, thank you so much for being with us today and sharing your words of wisdom and guidance. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on. God bless you guys.
And listener, until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Brian Hausman, inviting you to remain heartwise. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for joining us today on Heartwise. If you'd like more information on how to build and maintain optimum physical, mental, and spiritual health, log on to heartwiseministries.org. Heartwise is a listener-supported program, and your partnership with us would be greatly appreciated. Once again, our web address is heartwiseministries.org.